projects in Utah and projects in Wyoming. And I founded the company more or less through finding and acquiring and growing those projects. And so we've been hard at it since 2019. We're probably in our fifth season of on-the-ground exploration now, but our real focus is in Wyoming, where our lead project, Low Herma, is. And look, what attracted us and me to Wyoming was in-situ recovery and the fact that, as a jurisdiction, we were very confident we could get those projects progressed, both through the exploration phase and then eventually into development. So there's a lot of projects been permitted in the past, and Wyoming is one of four jurisdictions in the US that can handle its own permitting at state level. So they're called agreement states, and they can handle the permitting at a state level rather than having to go to the federal government to seek permitting.
Good day. We have with me Bruce Lane, CEO, Executive Director of American Uranium. How are you, Bruce?
I'm great, Steve. It's good to be with you.
Bruce, you're in Australia. You've got projects in the United States. If you can tell me a little bit about yourself, and then if you can tell me about American Uranium, I'd love to ask you about your projects.
Yeah, look, I've been based in Perth, probably in Western Australia, for the best part of 20 years, but I've been involved in lots of minerals projects around the world and in the US, and we've been operating with uranium projects in the US since 2019. So we're not newcomers, and we've always been in uranium. We changed our name recently from GTI Energy to American Uranium Limited. And I'm hoping it's kind of obvious why we changed our name, because that's actually what we're doing. And our name was a little bit confusing for people.
Yeah.
Look, we've got projects in Utah and projects in Wyoming. And, I founded the company more or less through finding and acquiring and growing those projects. And so we've been hard at it since 2019. We're probably in our fifth season of on-the-ground exploration now, but our real focus is in Wyoming, where our lead project, Low Herma, is. And look, what attracted us and me to Wyoming was in-situ recovery and the fact that, as a jurisdiction, we were very confident we could get those projects progressed, both through the exploration phase and then eventually into development. We also like the really simple metallurgy in the powder river basin. We've got a very simple sandstone hosted uranium ore, and we've been able to confirm that it's amenable to alkaline leach, which is the simplest form of ISR mining. So those are some of the highlights of why we're there. Projects 10 miles away, Low Herma, from Cameco's Smith Ranch Highland, which is the largest permitted in-situ facility in the US. And we're within 40 or 50 miles of UEC, UR Energy, Encore, Energy Fuels at Nichols Ranch. So we're right in the middle of probably the most prolific uranium producing area in the US, and that's obviously a big attraction for why we're there.
So you've been in Low Herma in the Powder River Basin? Is that
correct? The Powder River Basin, and it's Low Herma. And Low Herma. A bit of history around that interesting name is that it's a family name, and it's a daughter's name, Herma Werner. And they called it Low Herma, so we stuck with it.
Well, if you can tell me a little bit more about Low Herma, am I saying it right? My Spanish is killer.
Yeah, no, look, it's actually not Spanish. It's I believe it's German or East or Western European. So it's Loherma.
Loherma.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I can't have an Australian's guy's Spanish be better than me. I'm from Southern California.
Yeah, it does sound a little Spanish when you first hear it, for sure. And
Loherma.
yeah.
So, Loherma, you got all these companies out there. And
yeah.
You and people actually, you know, obviously believe in this area. If you can tell me about the jurisdiction a bit, how friendly it is. I mean, the infrastructure that's there, the, you know, like, why is everybody excited about this area?
Yeah, look, ISR uranium's been practiced since the 1970s in this area. And it was actually, there's always a bit of debate about who invented in situ recovery mining. I've heard lots of different versions, but I believe it was started in the Shirley Basin in Wyoming in the 60s. Now, Shirley Basin is south, about an hour south of Casper in Wyoming. And UR Energy are actually constructing an in-situ recovery mine there as we speak. And it's their second project. They're currently producing down at Lost Creek in the Great Divide Basin. So that is about an hour the other side of Casper. We're 40 minutes north of Casper, so very close. That project at Shirley Basin is 8.8 million pounds. Our project at the moment is 8.57 million pounds, and we're currently drilling to try and expand it. So what I like to try and get across to people is that not only are there producing ISR uranium plants around us, that includes Lost Creek, which is UR Energy, and then we've got Peninsula's Lance project a little further north, about 100 miles. It's slightly different because it's not an alkaline leach project, it's an acid leach project, but we could talk about that if that's useful to people. But we've got UEC's Willow Creek, Irigiri, or Christensen Ranch, as it's sometimes called, about 40 or 50 miles north of us. We've also got Nichols Ranch from Energy Fuels, which is permitted, but it's not operating. Cameco, which is permitted 10 miles away, not operating yet, but we believe it will come back into production. So Encore have a project at Dewey Burdock, and they've also got one of the gas hills. So there's a lot of projects being permitted in the past, and Wyoming is one of four jurisdictions in the US that can handle its own permitting at state level. So they're called agreement states, and they can handle the permitting at a state level rather than having to go to the federal government to seek permitting. And so there's a reason why all of the, well, I think pretty much all of the uranium mining in the US at the moment is either Wyoming, Colorado, Texas, or Utah, because those are the four agreement states. So Encore and UEC are down in Texas, but they're also in Wyoming. And of course, you've got Energy Fuels, both in Wyoming and of course, down in Utah at the White Mesa plant. So Wyoming's one of the friendliest jurisdictions. Those four are all friendly, but Wyoming and Texas and Utah in particular, very friendly to uranium mining. So getting things done in terms of getting permitting done is great. And like I said before, we're only 40 minutes away from the city of Casper, 60,000 people. It's got a proper airport, massive oil and gas industry. And of course, lots of mining around. Wyoming's the largest coal mining state in the US, second largest energy producer after Texas, second least populated after Alaska. So it's a really good place to be progressing projects like these. Very supportive state government. And we do have infrastructure all around us. We've got roads right down the side of the project and through the project. We've got power lines right there. We've got a wind farm across the road. There's oil and gas facilities around. So it isn't in the middle of nowhere. It's really very accessible and relatively easy from an infrastructure point of view, which is one of the other reasons we were so attracted to that project in particular.
Bruce, you mentioned permitting. How long does permitting take in the state, typically in Wyoming? And what's kind of the hope for your timeline for not only your flagship, but if you can talk a little bit about your other projects that you have as well?
Yeah, look, with Loherma, we've been working on exploration permits, so not on, you know, construction or mine permits. We published a scoping study earlier this year, an interim study, which is a PEA in NI 43-101 equivalency. So we're not quite at the permitting stage. We've got another round of drilling this year before Christmas, probably one early in the new year as well, and then probably an updated scoping study. If all that goes well, as we hope it will, then we can move on to the serious part of permitting. And the main long-term component of the permitting is just the water, the aquifer exemption and the water monitoring for in-situ recovery. So the aquifer that the ore body sits in is what we use to transport the solution once it's been liberated by the leach, and then we pump it to the surface and then put it over an ion exchange tower. So we need to take a year or 18 months worth of water data so that we can then return it back to baseline during the reclamation phase of the mine. So we've got a timeline that says we could, if we're funded to do all of the work, get to construction during 2028, which means, we could conceivably be producing into that window of around 29, 30, 31, when the uranium supply demand situation gets really out of hand. It's that really looks like the period when there's going to be a desperate shortage of uranium. Not that we couldn't easily sell pounds if we had them today, and I'm pretty sure we could get north of $80 for them. But that's more realistically the time frame is probably that kind of period. A lot of things that have to go have to be done to get to that point, but that's roughly the time frame would be the earliest we could get into production.
Bruce, if you can tell me a little bit more about the other projects that you have, and if you can, along with that, if you can tell me about the capital you have and what the plan is to grow the company.
So we've got project portfolio includes some conventional projects down in Utah. We don't have a declared resource on those projects. They're about, well, in some cases, very close to Anfield's Shooter and Canyon Mill, about 100 miles away from Energy Fuels' White Mesa plant. We've got quite a lot of historical drilling. We've done some quite a lot of our own drilling, and it's in an area that there's been mining. We think there's a target there of a few million pounds of uranium and probably four times as much vanadium because that's kind of what the rocks give you in that part of Utah. So we've deferred work on that because we're much more focused on our Wyoming projects. So in Wyoming, we've got Low Hermer, which is the lead project, but we've also got significant property holdings in the Great Divide Basin and at Green Mountain. So we've got properties around the Lost Creek operating plant, and we've got resources in the ground there. We've got 1.66 million pounds there, but a significant exploration target on top of that of up to another 10 million pounds. And then we have a block on Green Mountain, which is tucked right in amongst what is UEC's ground. It used to be Rio Tinto's. UEC recently bought it, along with a Sweetwater mill. So we've got a significant block of land on the southern slope of Green Mountain. We've got about 12 miles of defined trend there, using geophysics and also some historical drill information that we have. We haven't had a chance to drill it yet. It's permitted to be drilled, but we've put all of our funding into focusing on Low Hermer. So we got significant potential there in that Great Divide Basin Green Mountain area. It's only 100 odd miles away from where we are. It's close enough that if we could develop one of those areas into a satellite deposit, we could process the pounds through a central processing plant at Low Hermer. But clearly our focus is to get on with Low Hermer. In terms of the capital of the company, we've got 107 million shares on issue, 107, and we've got 36 million listed options with a strike of 40 cents, and they've got a couple of years left before they expire. So I think we were trading today at just below 20 Australian cents. We're around a sort of 15 million US market cap. We've been higher than that. We've been up more around the 20 million mark over the course of the last few weeks. Like everybody else in the sector, we had a bit of a pullback last week, but we've had a bit of a return to form over the last 24 hours off the back of the Cameco, sorry, the Westinghouse announcement, and obviously the implications for Cameco. So that's where we stand. I think our last quarterly, which just came out a couple of days ago, showed $2.7 million in the company. We are spending money. We're drilling. We started drilling a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, and we've got 50 holes in our first program before Christmas. So, like all companies of our size, we need to find funds from somewhere. So that'll be part of our future. We try to do that in a non-dilutive way through, partnerships, farm-ins, JVs. But it is entirely possible we'll need to raise more equity capital. One thing to note is Snow Lake Resources is our immediate neighbour to the north. Their project abuts our project. They have a 50-50 JV for the Pine Ridge project. It's owned half by Snow Lake, LITM on the NASDAQ, and ASX listed Global Uranium Enrichment, GUE. Snow Lake just announced, and GUE just announced a merger a couple of weeks ago. Snow Lake holds 9.9% of our company through our last capital raising. So the trends, the mineral trend, the uranium trends in our property run to the north and run into their property, and they're currently drilling a few miles to the northeast of us at the moment and have been for the last month or so. So they can obviously see the potential synergies between our project and their project. They've got a very large exploration target, I think sort of 20 or 30 to 40 million pounds. If you put that together with our potential exploration target on top of our current 8 million, 8.5 million pounds, we could be in the region of 15 to 20 million pounds with what we know at the moment. So putting those two projects together could be a very substantial land holding, but it's very early days. They've only just taken 9.9% in the company, and we'll just have to see how that relationship evolves. But it was a good signal for us, and it clearly shows the possibilities there of some sort of working together, whether it's a JV. Maybe they'll just stay as a passive investor. Only the future will tell us that.
Bruce, what percentage of the company is made up of insiders and institutions?
Look, we've had a strong supporting group here in Perth who've been part of the company since 2019, and they've followed on in the raisings. And so they have a as a group working with a broker have a very maybe 20 or 30% of the company. We have the Snow Lake chunk at 9.9, a little bit with management. But it's probably more like 1 or 2% rather than a substantial stake, and the rest of our register is really retail. We brought in some institutional money with our last capital raise, some smaller family office money, but there's no large block other than the ones I've just described. So we've got 3,300 retail, well, predominantly retail shareholders. And that's kind of how we funded the company over the last, over the last 4 or 5 years.
Bruce, investors like to, like a lot of upside. They want to cash in. We talk about Lassonde curve, like where you are, or investors look at something with deep value. That there's a bargain. Now, and you got potential with, it seems, with the jurisdiction, the area, and a very highly coveted uranium area. You also talk about, 2028, 2029 timeline that, may seem far for some. So where is the deep value now? There's so much potential, it seems, with the infrastructure, with potential partnerships or other companies, I would think, in the area are very interested in the what you guys have in the area there. So if you can tell us about the deep value that you see, do you see yourselves as being undervalued? What do you see?
Yeah, look, I guess you'll hear from a lot of companies that they think they're undervalued, right? So what I would point to is the metrics that would support the idea that there's value that isn't appearing in the company's share price at the moment. You know, at the moment, if you look at just our Lohuma project, you know, 8.57 million pounds, and then you look at the valuation per pound is being attributed to that project, it's less than a dollar. So, you know, dollar US, and we have indicated resources 32%. You know, we've got an interim scoping study there. You know, we're probably the most advanced project that doesn't sit in a developer or a producing company. So all of the companies around us that have defined resources and anything close to a scoping study are all, you know, a few $100 million companies, and in some cases even larger. You know, UEC, UR Energy, enCore, you know, even Peninsula, they're all very large, high market cap companies. So none of them have got resources that, say, sorry, some of those companies have resources which they are developing to put through their own mills. But nobody outside of those companies has got a project as advanced as ours. And so it's kind of hard to get comparables on in kind of micro cap companies that have a similar asset to ours. There just simply isn't land available in Wyoming with resources in it that people can come and jump on. They have in Colorado and they have in Utah, but less so in Texas and Wyoming. So we think the company's in a really unique position for being as advanced as it is now. As you said, we'll look at might be 28, 29, 30. But for a uranium project, that's actually really near term. You know, these things as I think most people understand, can take decades and decades before they actually get into production, either because there's been lots of funding cycles and they haven't been able to consistently invest in the projects, and they've changed hands through the cycles, or permitting is a problem. You know, if you look at Denison, in Canada, they're you know, they've been doing that for decades and now getting close to permitting. So I think if you take all those things, plus the fact that, you know, pounds were transacting in the last cycle when uranium only went to was sitting at kind of $65 a pound, you know, projects like ours were transacting at multiples of 2, 3, 4, 5, sometimes even $6 a pound, and we're only really trading at a dollar or less. You know, we got total resources, inferred and indicated, of 10 million pounds across all of our projects. So if you look at the valuation of the company at, say, 15 million, you know, we think we're undervalued versus what the potential is of the pound. So that's probably where I see the value. And look, that's not taking into account that we think that the uranium price is going to strengthen from where we are now. And I don't think we're the only ones saying that. I think,
No, you're not.
you know, you just Grant Isaacs is the one I always point to at Cameco and listen to his quarterly conference calls. And you tell me whether whether uranium is going to get cheaper or more expensive. I think it's probably going to get more expensive. And I think the other thing that's really unique at this point in time is what's happening with the US administration's laser focus on energy, you know, gas, coal, and nuclear. And we're seeing these moves with the deal with Westinghouse today and the deal with Japan, which was, you know, a massive deal for nuclear. Hundreds of billions of dollars being put into SMRs and AP1000s from Japan. We know the Koreans are also, you know, building the AP1000 style reactor. They've got to get their uranium from somewhere, but the US has to get its uranium from somewhere. And when you're only producing about 1 million or so pounds a year against a current requirement of 47 million pounds, you know, without rebuilds or restarts, you know, expansion, capacity expansions, you know, and new builds, they're still short by millions and millions and millions of pounds. So we think that those things together, we think there's lots of leverage, lots of opportunities in the market that the market's going to deliver us.
Right.
But we also think we're fundamentally undervalued to start with, and that's where there's an opportunity over, particularly I think over the next 3 to 6 months. It could be sooner, but there's been lots of ups and downs to get to here, right? So I won't forecast when that happens.
Bruce, you mentioned 3 to 6 months. Curious about that. Where those numbers come from? If you can answer that along with my final question about any news or milestones that we can be looking for.
Yeah, sure. Look, I think my reference to 3 to 6 months is really around a couple of things. We've now finally seen commitments to new builds of AP1000s in the US. And it's not just at the government level, it's not just at Westinghouse level, it's at state level. We've got Fermi, we've got a number of parties all committing to build new large gigawatt scale reactors. They're likely to be on permitted sites, for instance, but existing current permitted sites. But the main thing is that there's a commitment there to build new nuclear because the economics are sound and the support is there from the World Bank and from the government and from the market. We've seen these massive capital raisings and the outperformance of companies like Constellation. What hasn't happened to date is that the utilities have not really dived into long-term contracting to forward cover their requirements. And if you remember what used to happen in the old days, and the kind of the Russians still do this, is they'll build you a nuclear reactor and then commit to a kind of lifetime of nuclear fuel. Typically, uranium's always been supplied in a long-term contract, but we've had this period over the last a couple of decades where there's been a lot of above ground mobile inventory due to the shutdowns of reactors and a lot of companies walking away from the sector. So we've now got this gap where the primary mine supply is only at 140, say, million pounds, and global demand's closer to 200 and growing. So that gap is has been filled by all this inventory that's been floating around. That inventory now doesn't exist. Particularly, we've had the Chinese stockpiling and all these other things going on. So I think what's happening is that that squeeze, that pinch point is coming, and we can see that in the firming up of the contract price, which I think is nudged up to $83. I don't tend to look at the spot price so much. I really focus on that contract price because that's
Right.
ultimately
What
what you're
drives?
building a plant for is long-term contracts, and maybe it won't be 100% of your supply, but it needs to underpin the capital that goes into the plant. So that's what we're really looking at. And why do I think it's 3 to 6 months? Look, I think the tailwinds, the news that's been coming out of the US administration and out of all of the companies that are supplying into the sector, the AI guys, the hyperscalers, or the Magnificent Seven, whatever you want to call them. I was at the WNA conference this year. I had a meeting with Amazon Web Services. Who would have believed that would have happened 2 years ago? They're out there and they want uranium. So I just believe that we're getting to that point where, things are ripening up, and the rubber bands are getting stretched, and then we're going to see something happen with pricing in the next 3 to 6 months. But I'm only repeating what I hear from other people for the most part. So, that's it, I'm no oracle forecaster, but I believe at least some of what I'm hearing.
Bruce, I just want to, for our listeners, want to provide a disclaimer. Bruce and American Uranium has not paid for this interview. I currently am not an investor of the company, although that may change in the future. Bruce, for those who are listening, I personally am not able to give investment advice, but I really appreciate you giving your story here. But if people want to follow you, learn more about your American Uranium. If you can provide the website, the ticker, any way we can follow or reach out to you.
Yeah, so we're ASX listed and the code is AMU. And we're also OTC listed and our code is AMUIF. The website's AmericanUranium.com.au. And what I'll do is after we're finished here, Steve, I'll send you a short 2 or 3 minute video which you could post a link to. But we're on, you'll find us on YouTube. And the thing I forgot to mention was what we've got to look out for in terms of news coming forward. We've got hydrogeological testing starting soon. We'll have drilling finished by, first round of drilling finished by Christmas. Probably have a resource update early in the new year. Then our plan is to get on and do infill drilling after that, followed by another resource update in the sort of probably in quarter two next year. And then we'll look to update our scoping study at that point. And then, you know, from there, hopefully we're moving on into that development phase of the project. And the project should justify the funding off the back of that scoping study.
Awesome. Bruce, thanks so much for being here. Thank you for your time. I know it's late over there in Australia. Thank you for teaching me Australian Spanish there. And in all seriousness, I do find your company, you know, we do see that it checks boxes. So thank you for, you know, coming on the show and letting our listeners be informed. Again, everybody, just be educated, do your own due diligence and own research before investing in any company. I cannot give investment advice, but American Uranium, Bruce Lane here. Thank you for coming on the show.
Great. Thanks, Steve. Thanks for your time. And if anybody wants to talk to me directly, then, you know, please reach out to the email on the website, and I'm happy to talk to anyone if they want to.
Awesome. Thanks so much, guys.